Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 10, Text 30. Nididhyasor Atmamayam Hridayam Nirabhidhyata Tato Manas Chandra Iti Sankalpa Kama Ivacha Nididhyasor Atmamayam Hridayam nirabhidyata Tato manas chandra iti Sankalpa kama eva cha Nididhyaso Being desirous to know Atmamayam
Own energy
Hridayam The location of the mind. Nirabhidyata was manifested. Tataha, thereafter. Manaha, the mind. Chandraha, the controlling deity of the mind. The moon. Iti, thus. Sankalpaha, determination. Kamaha, desire. Eva, as much as. Cha, also. When there was a desire to think about the activities of his own energy, then the heart, the seat of the mind, the moon, determination, and all desire became manifested. Purport. The heart of every living entity is the seat of the Supersoul, Paramatma, a plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without His presence, the living entity cannot get into the working energy according to His past deeds. The living entities who are conditioned in the material world are manifested in the creation in terms of respective inclinations inherent in them. And the requisite material body is offered to each and every one of them by the material energy under the direction of the Supersoul. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 9.10. When, therefore, the Supersoul is situated in the heart of the conditioned soul, the requisite mind is manifested in the conditioned soul, and he becomes conscious of his occupation as one is conscious of his duty after waking up from slumber. Therefore, the material mind of the living entity develops when the Supersoul sits on his heart, after which the mind, the controlling deity, moon, and then the activities of the mind, namely thinking, feeling, and willing, all take place. The activities of the mind cannot begin without the manifestation of the heart, and the heart becomes manifested when the Lord wants to see the activities of the material creation. Nididhyasor atmamayam hridayam nirabhidyata tato manash chandra iti sankalpa kama evacha. The mind became manifested when the universal form desired to think about the activities of his own energy. This indicates that the mind is meant for spiritual realization. Atato brahmajigyasa. The human life actually begins when we begin the process of spiritual inquiry. Atato. Now, therefore. Vedanta Sutra is so nice. Sutra means very compressed. So the beginning is, therefore. Usually you give your whole argument and then you say, therefore. Vedanta Sutra is so tight, it starts by saying, therefore. Therefore can be understood in different ways. One understanding Srila Prabhupada gave is therefore means now that we've come to the human form of life, the animals and lower creatures can't inquire about spiritual realization, but the human being can inquire. Therefore, when he inquires about spiritual understanding, his human life actually begins. Otherwise, his life is a failure. Parabhavastava abhoda jato yavanna jigyasata atmatattvam. As long as a human being fails to inquire about spiritual realization, his life is a failure. He's basically engaged in the same activities as the animals, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But self-inquiry, reflective inquiry, is the privilege of the human being. One may wonder about so many things, one may think about so many things, but a thoughtful human being should think about who he is and why he's in such difficulty in this material world. When Srila Sanatana Goswami met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, these were his questions. Kayami, Kenayama Jadatapatra, who am I? And why are these threefold miseries always giving me trouble? This is suitable thought for the intelligent human being. He should try to understand who he is and try to make a solution to the actual problems of life. The problems of life are not to figure out where can I buy this, where can I get that. The real problems are these threefold miseries, miseries from other living beings, miseries from nature, and from the body and mind. Oh, Atmamaya. One should desire to know one's own true nature. One should desire to achieve self-realization. Nididhyasur atmamayam hridyam niravidyata. When the Lord had a desire to know about his own energy, then the heart was manifest, hridyam. Because the heart is the seat of the soul and the super soul. The heart is the seat of self-realization. Isra sarvabhutanam hridye sarvinatishtiti. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is seated along with the individual soul within the heart. Hridyesha. And tato manaschandriti, the mind became manifest. And Chandra. The Chandra is the controlling deity of the mind. We've been discussing that every one of the senses has a controlling deity, a deity who controls the activities of that sense. And for the mind, the controlling deity is Chandra, the moon god. the moon and the mind have a connection. Therefore, in Vedic astrology, if you want to understand the position of the mind, you look to the moon. How is the moon situated? Is it well situated? Is it being attacked by Rahu? So many questions concerning the moon, because the moon is the indicator for the mind. Even in ordinary dealings, we understand that the moon influences the mind. When the moon is full, people become romantic. They want to go to the Taj Mahal on the full moon day. Or this word lunatic comes from Latin, luna, the mind. Because the ancient people observed some sort of connection between the movements of the moon and the movements of the mind. So the mind is the center of all the senses. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Indriyanam manaschasmi, among senses I'm the mind. All of the senses flow into the mind. The mind is the center of the senses. And therefore, yoga aims at controlling the mind. Yoga aims at controlling the mind. In the Bhagavad Gita, it said that the mind is the best friend of the living entity and the worst enemy also. So the mind is indicated here, along with sankalpa kama evacha. Sankalpa means determination. It's mentioned in Lord Kapildev's teachings that the mind essentially has two functions, sankalpa and vikalpa. Sankalpa means acceptance or determination, and vikalpa means rejection. The mind accepts something or becomes determined to go after something, or the mind rejects. And generally the mind is fickle. Chanchala hi mana Krishna pramati balabhadridham tasyaham nigraham manye vayuriva shudushkana. Lord Krishna says that the mind is chanchala. Chanchala means flickering. And pramati, crazy. And balava, very strong. Dridham, determined. When the mind is stuck on something, it's very hard to unstick it. Tasyaham nigraham manye. To control the mind, Arjuna says, seems as difficult as controlling the wind. Stop. Wind doesn't stop so easily. How can you stop it? So the mind is difficult to control. But by the process of Krishna consciousness, the mind can be controlled. How is that? The mind has to be controlled by the intelligence. Indriyani paranyahur indriyebhya param manaha manasastu parabhuti. Manasastu parabhuti. Yogute parakastu. Higher than the senses, higher than dull matter are the senses. Higher than the senses is the mind. And higher than the mind is the intelligence. And above the intelligence is the soul. Therefore, the mind is meant to be controlled by the intelligence. In the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna says the same thing. Evam buddhe param buddhva samstabhyatmanam atmana jahi shatrum mahabaho kamarupa dvasara. Because the intelligence is higher than the mind, one should make the mind steady by intelligence. Sankalpa vikalpa, accepting and rejecting, the mind goes back and forth. Yes, no, 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 no, yes, yes, no. Flickering. But the intelligence is steady. The mind just flickers. But when the intelligence gets on top of the mind, the intelligence is analytical. Why yes? Why no? Analyzes. What are the benefits? What are the disadvantages? So when one reaches a conclusion by intelligence, that conclusion is fixed. Otherwise, when you follow the mind, today it may lead you to the right, tomorrow it may lead you to the left. Today I come on a whim, tomorrow I leave on a whim. But when the intelligence is engaged, then I stick. Not a question of, I like it, I don't like it, I like it, I don't like it. It's a question of understanding, conclusively. Therefore, one has to understand Krishna consciousness by intelligence. Otherwise, if it remains on the mental platform or the platform of sentiment, today I'll come on sentiment, tomorrow I'll leave on sentiment. But if I understand the philosophy by intelligence, and intelligence is the next door neighbor of the soul, the intelligence will control the mind, and the soul rule the intelligence. Sankalpa means determination, and kama means desire. The mind is the seat of desires also. The senses are tugging on the mind. Come on! And if the mind becomes interested, all right, let's go. All the knowledge-gathering senses are feeding into the mind. Look at this. Hear this. Now hear this. Now see this. Now touch that. All the data from the world is being channeled into the mind. And the mind thinks about all these things and desires develop. Dhyayato vishaya pumsam sangaste shupiyam sangat samjayate ka. From the thinking of sense gratification, the desires start to develop. This is also called sankalpa. Another meaning of sankalpa is mental concoction. Sankalpa prabhavan kaman sarvan tyaktva, like that, asheshita. The mind starts thinking about something, and then desire develops. There's a what was it? There's a story by Leo Tolstoy, and in that story the main character tells how he became attracted to his wife. And it seems they went on a boating outing, and he noticed she had like a curl of hair and a tight sweater. And that was it, you know, his just mind became stuck on those features, and he became attracted. Doesn't matter whether it's anything of substance, but the mind is thinking about, oh, that curl of hair. It's nothing, but by mental concoction, the mind makes a picture of sense enjoyment. There's some, as long as we're into this and that, there's some Charlie Chaplin film. Charlie Chaplin is authorized. And in this Charlie Chaplin film, a girl rides by on the horse, and Charlie Chaplin sees her and becomes enchanted, and starts thinking of her, and the thought bubbles start coming, and he gets together with her, and they fall in love, and they get married, and they're living in a little cottage, and they're happy together, and they're little children, and the whole thing is there. And so he starts going after her. I think maybe he gets a horse too and chases after her, or somehow or other he's trying to catch up with her. And then finally he does catch up with her, and he sees that she's wearing glasses. And the whole thing falls apart. It's mental concoction. Or back to Vedic literature, that Muni was meditating. Different times, Munis are meditating. One Muni is meditating, and he hears ankle bells. And he thinks there must be a very beautiful girl there. Actually, Indra had sent a heavenly society girl, Menaka. But the whole thing began. How did he become attracted? The bells were ringing, and the little bells started filling his mind. Bells means ankles, ankles means girl, girl means beautiful. And that was the end of his meditation, or that was the beginning of his meditation in a different direction. Similarly, Shobhari Muni was meditating underwater, and he happened to see two fish having sex life. Now, that's not such a wonderful thing. But he began meditating on the subject matter, and it must have been that he transferred the subject matter from the fish species to the human species in his mind. And he developed lusty desires and broke his meditation and came onto the shore and again got married to some girls. So this is sankalpa. Sankalpa means what's created by the mind. Desires that are created by the mind. Krishna says, Sankalpa prabhavan kaman sarvan tyaktva asheshita. One has to give up all these desires that proceed from mental concoction. When Arjuna asked Krishna, what is the symptom of a self-realized person? How does he sit? How does he walk? How does he speak? Krishna said, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogata atmanye vatmana tushta stitta pragyasta rochite. The symptom is that he gives up all desires which are coming from the mind. Manogatan means coming from the mind. Mental concoctions. I will be happy if I have X, whatever X might be. The whole material world is based on mental concoction. There's nothing here for my happiness, actually. But I'm imagining that this will make me happy, that will make me happy. And people are also encouraging me. People are paid to encourage me. Buy this and you'll be happy. Smoke this and you'll be happy. Do this and you'll be happy. And again, it's mental concoction. By mental concoction, I'm thinking that I'm smoking a cigarette and I'm getting cool. It's mental concoction. The whole material existence is based on mental concoction about sense enjoyment. It's not enjoyable, actually. It's the source of birth, death, disease, and why am I suffering the threefold miseries? Because I'm trying to enjoy. If I weren't trying to enjoy that which is not enjoyable, I wouldn't suffer. It probably tells us about some bird. He was seeing the reflection of fruit in the mirror, and so he's pecking on the mirror. Oh, he's not going to enjoy any fruit that way. He's just going to hurt his beak. Well, that's our position. We're trying to enjoy the material energy, and we're becoming entangled and suffering. Therefore, that idea of mental enjoyment, of that enjoyment, is a mental concoction. The very idea that I'm an enjoyer is a mental concoction. I'm not the enjoyer, nor are these things enjoyable for me, but by mental concoction. So many ideas are there. This will make me happy, that will make me happy. His desires develop. So Krishna says that when one gives up all these desires, manogatam, that are coming from the mind, atmanyevatmana tushta, and his mind finds satisfaction in the soul or the super soul, then stitta pragya. Then he's transcendentally situated. The deity of the mind is the moon, but actually the ultimate deity of the mind is Krishna. Krishna Chandra. Not this mundane Chandra, but Krishna Chandra. The mind is meant to be attracted to Krishna. Aniruddha. The real deity of the mind is Krishna. So when the mind is attracted to Krishna, then the mind forgets about so many ideas for sense enjoyment created by mental concoction. Atmanyevatmana tushta. Because he becomes satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Actually, the mind will never be satisfied anywhere in the material world. But when the mind is focused on Krishna, when the mind is absorbed in Krishna, then the mind becomes satisfied. Therefore, Govindadas prays, Bhaja Hure Mana Sri Nandanandana Abhaya Charanada Vindana. My dear mind, please engage yourself in the devotional service of Krishna. Sabai mana Krishna pararavindi. The Maharaj Ambarish, it's described that first thing, he fixed his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. Vachamsi vaikuntha gunarnabhani. And he engaged his words in speaking about Krishna. He engaged all of his senses in the service of the Lord. But the first sense is the mind, or the center of the senses is the mind. When we're chanting Hare Krishna, the mind is meant to be fixed on the transcendental sound vibration. This is meditation. This is concentration. to withdraw the mind from so many other things. What are those other things? Sankalpa prabhavan kama. So many ideas coming out of sense, out of mental concoction. The mind should be withdrawn from other things and focused on the transcendental vibration. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One doesn't have to think anything. One simply has to focus the mind on the transcendental sound. Srila Prabhupada told one devotee, just try to hear yourself chant sincerely. This is the practice. When the mind is fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna, then our desires become purified, mind becomes purified, heart becomes purified, our energy, our life, everything is purified when the mind is absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So we should chant with great attention. Avoiding the 10 offenses means especially to chant attentively, to hear the transcendental vibration. And we have so many books, we have so much engagement in the service of Krishna. So we should arrange our lives in such a way that the mind becomes absorbed in Krishna and devotional service and has no opportunity to be otherwise engaged. All right. Are there some questions?
I have a question regarding this, the last point when you're chanting. Sometimes, while we are trying to be really absorbed in holding, some natural, some thoughts come, or some attitude, you know, like, I want to be the servant, like praying in that mood. But then, where is the limit? Sometimes it seems helpful, you know, just to get some attitude. But then, if I start just to think too much, you know, then I'm dragged away. So how could you describe this?
Yeah, therefore the mind should be focused on the chanting. If we have thoughts like, I want to be engaged in the service of Krishna, that's good. These are purified thoughts. That means the chanting is working. I'm not thinking, gee, I'd like to go out and do something horrible. I'm thinking, I want to increase my service to Krishna. That's nice. But then, if it becomes, as you say, a big line of thought, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and it's this, 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 then 20 minutes later we come back and realize that we haven't been chanting with attention. The mantra is lost somewhere. So, therefore, our main business is to hear. And we don't mind if a thought comes, like, I would like to serve Krishna more. That's nice. But we should stay focused on the transcendental sound.
Which deity is responsible for intelligence?
What's responsible for intelligence?
Which deity?
Deity.
The deity is responsible for the intelligence. Which deity? Intelligence. You know, I don't know. In the material complex, which deity rules intelligence? Sorry. Brahma? Interesting thought. It ends here. In the next descriptions, it's not going to go beyond the mind and talk about intelligence. Stops here. Have to. Maybe you can do some research and let me know. Otherwise, on the higher platform, Pradyumna Niruddha, different forms of Chaturvyuha are in charge of mind, senses, and intelligence. But on the demigod platform. Some other question?
How to understand that the soul and super soul are still in the heart within beings and plans?
How to understand that the soul and super soul are situated in the heart? Just accept it. Krishna says it. Oh, plants and trees? Yeah, insects, they have hearts someplace. You have to work pretty hard to find it, because you have to work pretty hard to find the mind. Where's the mind of the tree? It's not a whole lot going on there in the mental department.
Why we are sometimes feeling the mind here in the head? Sometimes.
Why are we feeling the mind in the head? No. Mind is, you feel it anywhere. You know, we do a lot of seeing, and the eyes are there in the head. Brain is in the head, but your mind can be in your any part of your body, wherever it's focused, or it can be in the next county. You know, it can be three countries over. Mind moves around. From that point of view, but the seat of the mind is the heart. You just take it from Vedic knowledge.
Can you please explain when we start the lesson of Krishna actually wanted to, I don't know if I understand that Krishna wanted to think about material, and that's why the mind was
This whole section of Srimad Bhagavatam describes the universal form, and the description is that as the universal form developed different features, these features became manifest in the material world. When he desired to eat and drink, the mouth opened. When he wanted to have different tastes, the tongue appeared. So all of these things appear first in the universal form. And the living beings are within the universal form of the Lord. This is the great cosmic conception. Otherwise, Krishna himself is always in Goloka Vrindavan. And he has his eternal form, he's always enjoying. He has all of his senses, everything. But in terms of the material manifestation, this description comes into play. We're asked to see the cosmic manifestation in terms of its relationship to Krishna by envisioning this Virat Purusha, or the gigantic universal form of the Lord, and to see the material elements. Because the mind is finally a material element. It's not just my mind, but there's mind as an element. There's not just the water in the river or the glass, but there's water as a great cosmic element. Earth is a great cosmic element. Fire is a great cosmic element. Mind also. So all of these things on the great cosmic level are conceived of as being located within the gigantic universal form of the Lord, the Virat Purusha, the cosmic person, the person who himself is the form of the universe. In this way we're being asked to see.
So we have a small amount of that.
Mm-hmm.
The universal mind, we have the small amount.
Yeah, our little mind is dependent on the existence of the totality of mind.
How is Krishna connected with the universal form?
How is Krishna connected with this universal form? Well, we can say he's connected because the universal form is a manifestation of his expansion. Krishna expands as Balaram and so on, and Sankarshan, and comes down to the Mahavishnu. So this universal form, then Garbhadaksha Vishnu, so this universal form is expanded from the Purusha avatars. So that's connected with Krishna in that way. Another way is we can say that it's connected by imagination. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's said that this universal form is imagined. Imagined. In other words, when it's said that Krishna, for example, it's said that the higher planets are his head, the middle planets are his waist, the lower planets are his feet, the clouds are the hair on his head, the birds are his voice. So Krishna, the mountains are his bones, the rivers are his veins. So it's not that Krishna has a body made up of mountains and clouds and rivers. Krishna's body is Satchidananda Vigraha. He has a transcendental form as a supreme natural person. But we're asked to see the cosmic manifestation not simply as dull mechanical elements, but in relationship to Krishna. And to understand that relationship, or to understand the presence of Krishna everywhere within the cosmic manifestation, we're asked to see that form in relationship to the Supreme Person. In one sense, it's being said, imagine the universe as a person, as a great cosmic person. Why are we being asked to think that way? Because now we're thinking just in terms of dull matter. Our minds are materialistic. Think of matter, think of matter, think of matter, think of matter. That's what we do. But just to purify the mind, to start elevating the mind, and now think of matter in terms of a gigantic person. Think of matter in terms of a gigantic living person, a divine person. So by seeing in that way, we start to get a transcendental connection. We start to see the universe not just in terms of dull material elements, but in relationship to a higher reality, a reality that's ultimately personal. So this transfers our thinking from the dull material elements to the personality of Godhead. But because we're still attached to the material elements, we still think in terms of the material elements, we're advised to think of the personality of Godhead in terms of those material elements. The nature worshippers can take some guidance from this. Sometimes they have the idea that the earth is alive, or they try to envision the earth as an organism. So they're encouraged here that, yes, think that way. But there's a whole program for them. Don't stop there. Don't just think, well, nature is alive. But go all the way and think of nature in terms of that supreme cosmic person. But then understand, go further, that there actually is a transcendental person who is beyond matter, who is present within matter everywhere, but who is also beyond matter. This is the next conception, higher conception. So there's a step-by-step progression by which the materialists are guided in such a way that they can free themselves from materialistic consciousness, elevate themselves to higher and higher understanding, and finally come to the platform of the transcendental personality of Godhead. That's the idea.
Krishna is Vishnu, yeah.
Yes? Krishna and Vishnu are the same person. Krishna and Ram are the same person. Krishna and Nisringadeva are the same person. Krishna and Kurma, Matsya. No, they're the same. Advaitam Achyuta Manadi Mananta Rupa. It said that Krishna is Advaita. Advaita means he's not two. He's one. Advaita. Achyuta, he's infallible, anadi, he's beginningless. And Ananta Rupa, he has unlimited forms. Materially, if I say, cut something in two, if I take this piece of paper, which is one, and I do that, now it's two, well, this is not that, and that is not this. It was one, but it became two, and now it's not one. But Krishna, even when he becomes two, is one. He can do that. We can't do that. We can't divide into two. And if someone divided us into two, it would be bad news for us. But Krishna can divide himself into two, four, 16,000, as many forms as he likes, and he's still one. It's a capability that he has that we don't. Something like the sun is in many places at once, but it's the same sun. You know, you're here in Slovenia, you say, the sun is on my head. You write me an email, and I say, gee, that's funny, I'm in America, and the sun's on my head. Now, does that mean that the sun became two? Or if I had five little mirrors, you'd look in each mirror and you'd see the sun. Five suns. But actually, the sun is one. But it's appearing as five. Or any number. So Krishna appears in the heart of every living being as the super soul, but he's really one. It's not that I've got one super soul, you've got another super soul, she's got a third one, he's got a fourth one. It's the same person, but he's present everywhere. He can do that. When Krishna married 16,000 wives, we were talking about this the other day, he was living in 16,000 palaces individually with each wife. And then after performing his morning duties, he would come out of his palaces, the 16,000 Krishnas would come out, they'd become one Krishna, and they'd go to the assembly house. And at the end of the day, he'd walk out of the assembly house, become 16,108, and go into the 16,000 so many palaces again. He's one. But for his pastimes, he can manifest himself as two, as 2,000, as 20,000, and still remain one. Eka Brahma Tritiya Nasti. The Absolute Truth is one. But he can manifest himself as many, innumerable. Jiva Tattva is also the manifestation of Krishna, but it's called Vibhinnamsha, separated portion. The Vishnu Tattva is called Svamsa, the plenary portion, full portion that has full power. And Vibhinnamsha is the separated portion. Vibhinnamsha, living entities, they're also nothing but Krishna. They're not separated, actually. They're not separate from Krishna. But they're tiny. They're tiny particles of the energy of Krishna. And Vishnu is the energetic. Just as we have the sun and we have the sunshine, they're also one. You can't separate and you say, okay, we're drawing a line here. Sun's over here, sunshine's over there. Sun and the sunshine are indivisible. They're one. But the sun is the source and the sunshine is the emanation, the energy coming from the source. So Vishnu Tattva is the source of everything and Jiva Tattva is the emanation. But they're not actually divisible. Nothing is separate, ultimately, from Krishna. Even Maya is not separate from Krishna. It's dependent on Krishna. It's the energy of Krishna. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave his philosophy as Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Everything is simultaneously one and different. And how can we understand it? We can't understand it. Therefore, it's called achintya, inconceivable. Is that okay?
Is this also, can we think in some way about, for example, then the all gopis or Lakshmi?
Yeah, Lakshmi also has the capability. Radharani.
It's the same person.
Yeah, Radharani is also Krishna. She's the energy of Krishna. And the energy also expands.
So Lakshmi and Radharani is the same.
Yes.
So also Durga, because
Durga is also, there was an initiation. And Srila Prabhupada was giving names. He named one girl Mahamaya. So then devotees began to laugh. Prabhupada didn't like it when devotees would laugh during the initiations. Prabhupada said, it's serious. But Prabhupada said, Mahamaya is another face of Radharani. Chayeva yasya bhuvanani bibharti durga. The Durga, Maya, is the shadow.
Yes, but in person, she's like person, is she Radharani or some?
No, she's the shadow.
So it's a different person.
Yes. It's the energy of Krishna acting in a different way. The shadow doesn't act quite the same way as the body. Or the cloud. What is the cloud? It's the sun. How is the cloud the sun? The sun has evaporated water from the ocean and formed the cloud. So the sun, the cloud is nothing but a manifestation of the sun. But the cloud acts in such a way that it blocks the sun from our vision. Although it's manifest from the sun. It acts in such a way that it blocks our seeing the sun. So Maya is the energy of Krishna, who's all spiritual. But Maya is the energy of Krishna that acts in such a way that it blocks our spiritual vision.
I mean, because Shiva is also Krishna, Shiva is Krishna. So he's Krishna, same person. So I thought maybe also then Maya is same person, Sada or Sada Maya, or I don't know, same person.
When Maya is manifested spiritually, that's the internal energy of Krishna. And when Maya is manifested materially, that's the external energy of Krishna. It's Krishna. Same thing, when the sun is manifest by its internal energy, you have sunshine. And when it's manifest by external energy, you have the cloud. The cloud is produced from the sunshine. So in one sense, you can say the cloud and the sunshine are the same. Cause and effect are one. But they act differently. Therefore, there's oneness and there's difference. Prabhupada gave the example that you take electrical energy, you can run a refrigerator or you can run a stove. It's the same energy, but it's acting differently. Actually, it's one, but it's employed differently. If I had, you know, $2,000, I could use it to buy something for you, or I could use it to hire someone to kill you. Yeah, but it means I can use that energy. One way it becomes something for your happiness, another way it becomes the cause of your death. But it's the same, from my point of view, it's the same energy. It's $2,000. But it's a question of how it's employed. So Krishna's energy is, in one sense, one. But Krishna employs it differently. When he employs it for the loving dealings in the spiritual world, it's called the internal energy. And when he employs it for the prison activities of the material world, it's called the external energy. Otherwise, actually, it's all spiritual because it's Krishna's energy. And Krishna is spiritual. But it's acting materially. It's acting in such a way as to create illusion, distress, so many problems. Why? Because we've turned away from Krishna, so it acts upon us differently. Government. If you act in one way, it will use its energy to send you to college. You act in another way, it sends uses its energy to send you to jail. It's up to you how you want to deal with the government. That will determine how the energy of the government is directed toward you. How it will act upon you. Okay.
In Brahma, Moha Lila, when Krishna stood with our boys and Vishnu Dakas, and children, when Balaram came back, he didn't die. He was 7 years. He saw the affection of the parents. He stood with the Vishnu Dakas. How come?
When Balaram came back and saw that the boys were all playing with Krishna, it took him a little time to figure out that these boys were all Krishna. So why did it take him some time? That's his pastime. Just like Krishna, all of his friends marched into the mouth of Aghasura, and Krishna was thinking, now what am I going to do? Well, this is Krishna's, these are Krishna's pastimes. His own internal energy acts in such a way that it creates the scene of Krishna's pastimes, the mood of Krishna's pastimes. And Krishna enjoys that energy in that way. Why is Krishna bewildered? Because he enjoys being bewildered. He enjoys entering into that role as if he were an ordinary person and wondering, now what am I going to do? Something else? Yeah, to increase your sense of duty, you have to apply your intelligence to the mind. Suppose the spiritual master asks you, now do this. You stay in the temple and take care of the deities, or you go out on Sankirtan, whatever it might be. Then the mind starts up and says, oh, And everybody else is going out and traveling and, you know, meeting people and distributing books, and, you know, I have to stay in the temple. Maybe I could ask someone else to go out to watch the deities for a while, and I could go out. And you start, you know, thinking, or you're out of the book distribution, and you're thinking, you know, I'm not feeling very well today, and nobody, this place is not very good, and people are not responding, and, you know, anyway, I have to spend the day back sometime at the temple. Maybe today's, you know, I have a lot of laundry to do anyway, and, you know, maybe it's going to rain also. And, you know. So the mind starts making different proposals. Or you're married, and then the mind says, you know, I don't know why I got married. All right, I know why I got married, but I don't know why I got married to her. Maybe, you know, actually there's that other girl, and maybe I could, well, maybe I could stay married, but I could be friends with this girl, or maybe I could get rid of this wife and marry that wife, or maybe I could have two wives, like Prabhupada said that, you know, in the Vedic culture, that, you know, so the mind starts, you know, the mind is so creative, there's like nothing that the mind can't think of. But by intelligence, we have to grab hold of the mind by the collar and say, wait a second, buddy. You know, you got married to this wife, and, you know, you're having enough of a hard time with one, forget two. And, you know, there's no guarantee that the one over there is really going to be better than the one over here. And it really doesn't matter whether she's better or worse, she's your wife. And it's not a question of what you like and you don't like, it's your duty. This is not, you know, an amusement park over here, it's a question, this is devotional service. And, you know, one wife, another wife, you know, a wife is a wife, and I have my duty to do. And, all right, this person is out on book distribution, but my Guru Maharaj told me, take care of the deities. So I'm going to take care of the deities, because that's what he told me to do, and devotional service means doing what your spiritual master told you to do. Or he told me to go out on book distribution, and it really doesn't matter whether it rains or doesn't rain, or whether people say yes or no. My duty is to, you know, offer them books. And if they take, they take. If they don't, they don't. But at least I'm doing my duty. So in that way, by determined intelligence, by fixed intelligence, one has to boss the mind around. One has to take control of the mind and direct it. The way you take, you know, an ox. The ox thinks, well, you know, over on the side of the road I could get some vegetables. Or the ox says, you know, why do I keep walking? I could just sit here and, you know, stand here, it's good enough. Why do I have to keep moving? But the person who's driving the ox has a little stick, and, you know, he has different sounds that he makes, and he lets the ox know who's in charge. And, you know, you go when I tell you to go, and you stop when I tell you to stop, and we'll stop by the side of the road when I'm ready to stop by the side of the road, and not before and not after. And that way one takes charge of the ox, and then your ox cart goes the way it's supposed to go. Or if you don't have ox carts, you have a car. And it's not just, you know, whichever way the car decides to go. You've got a steering wheel, and you use it to make the car go where you want. And if you lose control of that, you're really in for quite a ride. So one has to take charge of the mind by intelligence. It's not always easy to act on the level of intelligence, but it's a lot easier to act on the intelligence than to act on the level of unintelligence. But how can you strengthen the intelligence? Read these books. follow the process of devotional service and practice using the intelligence. You know, like muscles, if you don't exercise them, they lose their strength. And if you do exercise them, they get stronger. So we have to actively engage our intelligence in devotional service. And that's part of intelligence, that, wow, better, you know, even if I have difficulty acting on the platform of intelligence, it's sure better than acting without intelligence. Because when I act without intelligence, I suffer. Unintelligent means stupid. If I don't use my intelligence, I'm going to be stupid. I'm going to be doing stupid things. And when I do stupid things, I suffer. So therefore, it's better for me to use my intelligence, to act on the platform of intelligence. The materialists, you know, they think sometimes that, you know, just to be stupid is good. Really, you know, they just let their forget intelligence. You know, let's just do it. You know, they're like practically agreeing to put their intelligence on the shelf while they do something else. And that's something else. And why are they doing it? Kamesha krodesha, because lust is telling them, you know, do it, do it, do it. And lust is overcoming their intelligence. Therefore, kama rupa durasa, one has to jahi shatru, one has to conquer that enemy in the form of lust by intelligence. And why are we doing stupid things? Because of stupid desires. What do we have to do about them? Control them. How? By intelligence. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example, stupid. There was some person in my acquaintance, he got implicated, he was like a skinny little art student. And he became implicated with someone's wife. And the someone was like a big, solid Italian construction worker. That's stupid. If it had an ounce of intelligence functioning, he would have said, wait a second, you know. This is the problem. When intelligence is lost, and everything's lost. Buddhi nashat pranashati. That's mentioned. Dhyayato vishaya pumsam. One starts thinking about sense gratification, sangasteshu bhajayate, then there's some bond that develops. Sangat sanjayate kama, lust starts growing. Kama krodho bhajayate, it leads to anger. Krodhat bhavati sammoha, that leads to illusion. Sammohat smriti bibrama, that leads to forgetfulness. Smriti Brahmshad Buddhi Nasha, when you become so forgetful, your intelligence is lost, and Buddhi Nashad Pranashati. And when your intelligence is lost, you're finished. Kama Raga Vimukta is two, Andreas, Vishyandreas, Charanatma, Pashyavi, Hey Atma, Prasadma, Yoshi. But one frees oneself. From material lusty desires, controls the senses, he gets the mercy of Krishna. Prasade sarva dukkhanam hanirasya upajayate. And he becomes freed from all miseries and becomes satisfied. His mind becomes satisfied. And then his intelligence becomes fixed. So from the very beginning, we should keep the mind and intelligence fixed in Krishna consciousness. Yeah, one time someone asked Srila Prabhupada, is the universal form just for this one universe? Prabhupada said, one universe is enough for you.
And then because only it's in the Mahavishnu, because it's
one universe. One universe. One universe is enough for you. Why are things in Bhagavatam that we won't understand? Even if we don't understand them, we become purified by thinking about them. Sorry?
There are things in Bhagavatam, subjects that we should understand more than...
We should understand all the Bhagavatam more. But some things, Sukadeva Goswami says, even if you have a lifetime of Brahma, you can't fully understand this. We'll never fully understand even one word of Srimad Bhagavatam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while explaining the Atmarama verse to Sanatana Goswami, said that actually every word is Krishna. Every word of Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. And therefore every word has unlimited meaning. And we'll never fully understand even one word of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because we'll never fully understand Krishna. But something. We just want to, therefore, pibata bhagavatam, just relish Srimad Bhagavatam. Just try to associate with Krishna in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. Stop, go. Last question.
We say that in Vedic culture, the evidence is Shastra. Something in Bhagavatam said it is the evidence. How to explain this to some people who like material science?
Our evidence is Srimad Bhagavatam. How do we explain this to material scientists? Yes, everyone has what they accept as evidence. You accept nature. And there's a magazine called Nature. It's a journal. And when something's published in Nature, you accept it. You don't do all those experiments and replicate all those results, do you? You take it on authority. The professor such and such, with these credentials from such and such university, has done this experiment and has reported these results. You take it on the authority of nature. You don't really know. Maybe Professor such and such doesn't really exist. Maybe he's a fiction. Maybe he exists, but the experiment was never really done. Maybe it was done, but the results were completely opposite of what was reported. You don't know. You're here in Slovenia, and you know, you just get this magazine from abroad. You don't know. But you accept it. You know this is an authoritative magazine, peer-reviewed by great scientists, and they only publish reliable reports. So you accept. You accept it as authority. You don't double-check everything. Your father told you, this is a watch. You accepted it, this is a watch. And that's how you learned that it was a watch. Authority. Everyone has some authority that they accept. You're a scientist, and you're teaching in the university, and you have all these people who sit in front of you, and you talk. And they're supposed to learn by believing what you say. And all right, they may ask questions, they may say, well, I don't understand this, or I wonder about that, or is this really true? But finally, the way they learn is by sitting there and listening to what you say with some faith. Otherwise, if they sit there in your class and they say, ah, that Professor McCormick, he's full of prunes, he doesn't know what he's talking about, he's a jerk, he's an idiot, they're not going to learn anything. You know, if they sit through all their classes, oh, Professor McCormick, he's a jerk. Professor Smith, he's a jerk. That guy, he's a jerk too. They don't know anything. At the end of the term, that student will also come out not knowing anything. The only way he learns is that he submissively hears from the learned professors. That's how knowledge is transmitted. And you may ask questions, you may try to understand, how is this true, is this right? But finally, it has the power of authority. So you accept people like Darwin as authorities, and we accept Krishna as authority. Is that right? Especially if we want to understand what's beyond our senses, we have no alternative than to accept from authority. Suppose you don't know who your father is. How are you going to find out? You know, do experiments, do DNA tests on, you know, the whole population of Slovenia. You know, you may do all the tests, and then they say, still say, well, maybe there's somebody that I missed. And someone, my father might have been in Slovenia and moved to America. How can we know? But when you hear from your mother, my dear boy, this is your father, you got the whole thing in one moment. Okay, Hare Krishna, glories to Srila Prabhupada.